pleased to welcome to Hot Talk the Secretary of Energy, Spencer Abrahams, with us on Hot Talk. How are you, Mr. Secretary?
Great, thanks. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your trip, how your impressions of North Dakota and what you saw.
Well, the trip was a little too short, I'm afraid, so hopefully I can get back. But today we were it was a chance for me to see firsthand what goes on at the EERC facility here in Grand Forks, the Energy and Environmental Research Center. That's a research program that our department's been connected to for a long time, do a lot of work together on. And they're doing cutting-edge work. I mean, the kind of things that we hope will contribute to this country's long-term energy security future. And so it was a chance for me to learn a little bit more about their specialties. And I suspect, as a result of that, even more connection between our department and the facility will extend.
Knowing Governor Hoban as I do, I'm guessing he bent your ear on a couple of things. Characterize those conversations for us.
Well, as I told the employees when I spoke to them, there are tenacious governors who are trying to get your attention to the programs of their states. There's very tenacious governors. Then there's Governor Hoban, who leads the way in terms of being both justifiably proud of as well as promoting what goes on here. And as I said to the group and as the governor laid out for us today, you know, North Dakota is one of the nation's leading energy producing states. Its potential to contribute to North Dakota, Minnesota, the upper Midwest's energy security future is great. We got a lot of opportunities to develop some new technologies here that will help the rest of the country as well. And so he certainly made his pitch for a number of new research grants that are under consideration.
We're big backers on this program of ethanol, and I know the president has a commitment to ethanol, and that's been put forward in that energy bill I wish the Senate would quit sitting on. But I'm sure you do. Give us a little insight into the role that ethanol has in the president's plan for energy independence.
Well, the president believes that we've got to be moving to alternative energy sources, not just depending on foreign oil imports for the future. One of the things that is a centerpiece in his strategy is increasing the use of ethanol, and that's what this energy bill that's stalled in the U.S. Senate would do. In addition, we're hoping to develop the use of hydrogen as a fueling source for motor vehicles, and that's another of the projects that EERC does research on. And so ethanol is a big part of what we think of as a cleaner, less dependent energy future for the United States. And unfortunately, the U.S. Senate keeps falling short of the votes needed to pass a bill. We're just two votes away, and that would have dramatically increased ethanol's role in the future.
Basically, it's going to take a presidential election to shake some energy policy loose, right?
Well, at this point, I'm afraid it may take that, and it's too bad. I mean, we've been trying to pass an energy bill for 3 years. We outlined in 2001 a 105-point plan for America's energy future and energy security. And 95 of the 105 recommendations the president made are ones we can implement and have implemented through executive action. The last ones require Congress. We need Congress to expand the use of ethanol. We need Congress to expand the use of coal programs. We need Congress to help us modernize the electricity grid. We need Congress to finish the job. And, you know, whenever there's a crisis, whether it's the blackout of last year or it's high energy prices, people in Washington always say we got to do something. Well, there's something that can be done. We hope it'll get done. That's to pass an energy bill.
Yeah, me too. A lot of wind out here in the prairie, too, of North and South Dakota and Minnesota. Does the energy, wind energy specifically have a role in the president's plans?
It absolutely does. We've pushed for the extension of the tax credits for renewable energy production. Again, something that's part of the energy bill to make those to extend those tax incentives. We also, of course, in my department, do a lot of wind energy research. In fact, about $40 to $45 million a year, and we are very optimistic about expanding the role of wind. The difference in the cost of producing electricity from wind versus normal, more traditional energy sources, that gap is closing. And with that closing of the gap, is going to be more wind energy production. One of the things you need, though, is the infrastructure. You need to be able, if we generate more electricity from wind power here in North Dakota, we've got to get that electricity to the parts of the country that need it. And we don't have enough transmission to do it. The energy bill, again, is pivotal because it provides incentives for that development.
I want to ask you about a couple other quick things before we get you on that plane. One is gas prices. Why are they so high right now?
Well, the main reason is because the price of oil in the world is at very high levels. $43, $44 a barrel for oil translates into higher prices at the pump. Why do we have that problem? Well, part of it is that the world demand keeps growing. And in the United States, we've got a growing economy that's contributed to overall demand increase. The world supply of oil is finite. Right now, worldwide production is almost at its maximum level. And so, again, we come back to passing an energy bill. We need to send a signal to the world that the United States isn't going to leave its energy future in the hands of others. We're going to do some things to take care of our own problems here at home. One of the things we should do, in my opinion, the president's opinion, is to produce oil up in Alaska, where we have billions of barrels of oil, and currently we have a congressional prohibition on tapping into it. It can be done. It can be done from an environmentally safe point of view. If we don't do it, we put ourselves at the mercy of dependence on foreign oil.
The Saudis have said recently, hey, we can crank up production here by about 1.3 million barrels per day, and we can do it right away, but these oil companies don't want us to. Our customers aren't asking for it. What's going on there?
Well, it's an interesting, I can't answer that because I haven't talked to these companies. They just made the announcement, as you know, yesterday. What the Saudis have said is that we're willing to sell even more oil than we are today. The problem isn't our production. There's obviously, of course, with the price of oil as high as it is right now, there's some reluctance on the parts of people to pay that much. And so that's probably a function of that's at play here. But at the end of the day, you know, our hope is to see more domestic production so that we're not just dependent on hoping that the producers in foreign countries will sell us more. We need to be able to do more ourselves, and we need to develop the new technologies like hydrogen, like ethanol, that allow us to have more control of our destiny here at home.
There is no quick fix and something that immediately can be done, though, to bring down the price of oil or ultimately the price at the pump for consumers, is there?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, part of this is just market speculation at this stage, and as the price has been sort of speculated about, it's been driven higher. We have tried to, you know, make it clear that we think the world economy suffers if the price of energy is too high. We've urged the energy-producing countries to produce at the highest, you know, production levels they can, and frankly, they've responded to our message, but. The demand keeps going up, and, you know, the energy market, whether it's for oil or anything else, is like other markets. Supply and demand matters. The good news is the demand's being driven by strong and growing economies. The bad news is that it's forcing up the price.
We're hearing the term energy independence a lot on the campaign trail, and some of the president's opponents say, hey, vote for us and gas prices will go down because we're for energy independence. Does that mean the president's not for energy independence?
Quite the contrary. You know, part of what our energy bill before the Senate is all about is energy, is increasing our energy security, reducing our dependence. The project I mentioned a moment ago, the Hydrogen Fuel Initiative, would be put in place if we pass the energy bill. If we're successful producing fuel for motor vehicles from hydrogen, we can eliminate much of our dependence on foreign oil. And the president's opponents who say they'll do a better job weren't even around when the vote on the energy bill took place. It fell short by 2 votes. So I find it a little bit ironic that they would be making those criticisms because their votes could have put us on a path towards far less dependence on foreign oil.
There also is some talk of you know, some different mandates, federal mandates on utilities to produce 20% of their electricity from renewable resources by 2020. Is that feasible? Is that doable?
Well, what we think is that every state should set its own goals. We don't see this as something that ought to be done as a federal matter because, look, North Dakota, for example, has the potential for a lot of renewable energy generated by wind. Other states don't have that opportunity, and we think each state should set the standard that's right for them. Now, when the president was the governor of Texas, that's what he did, and Texas has a renewable portfolio, a renewable energy program. And we think the other states should follow based on what they're capable of doing. Some states are, by virtue of their resources, in a better position than others to take advantage of renewable energy. And I think it's better if they do it that way. It would be, you know, I think it would be wrong, for instance, for every state to be told it had to use so much oil or so much natural gas when some states have more of it than others. It tries to set a national standard when you don't have equality, and we think the same is true with renewable energy. But we believe that the states are capable of doing it. Texas has done it. Others can as well, and they can do it based on what's best for their own needs.
Final question for you. There is a lawsuit right now underway by a group called Environmental Defense against the EPA. North Dakota is also a big coal state. What is the potential impact if there's success of these environmental groups in suing the EPA on the coal side of things, Secretary?
Well, obviously, one of the things that we believe is that coal and our coal reserves are an important national asset. We need to be able to use the coal this country has. North Dakota is one of the states that's fortunate to have ample coal reserves. That's why what we've been doing in the President's program is to significantly increase the federal investment in clean coal technology. Our belief is that we can use coal safely and cleanly if we put the right technology programs together. And one of the things that EERC does up here that I visited today is work in these areas. So we are committed and have proven it with our budgets. We are committed to investing more money in the future in developing clean coal technology so that states like North Dakota that have good coal reserves can benefit, creating more job opportunity.
We're going to get you on that plane. Great to have you in the state. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. Good to be with you.